And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And my co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Friday, August 7th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
TGIF Melody, I think.
I know the days are going by so fast, and we can't even keep track. Is it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday? And here we are again. But anyway, welcome, and welcome, listeners. And we got a great program for you today. We're going to talk about the July payroll growth that exceeded estimates, but there's going to be a lot of buts in this one. Gold today, based on that news, I'm sure. As that exceeded everyone's expectations, and usually when anything exceeds expectations, they're being fudged a little bit, but that's okay. So we had a little bit of a pullback in gold, and hey, it's no big deal. It's down $31 today, $2,033. Same thing with silver's down 80 cents at 28.21. Platinum was down 39 at 966. Palladium was down 90. A 2,192. And seeing those two numbers in platinum and palladium, although rhodium was still higher today, probably had a little bit more to do with trade in those areas and so forth. But I think the gold and silver was probably reacting more to the jobs report, some other information that's out there. But we'll talk about that as we go through the program today. And let's see what the USDX today, of course, that was stronger. With that jobs report up 0.63 and 93.42. And crude oil was down 42 cents at 41.53. Now, how many times have I said in the past couple of weeks, I'm going to have to start counting them. And I'm sure there's probably a listener or two that probably has and will probably call me if I'm wrong. But anyway, how many times have I told you that we were going to see them trying to stem the dollar from falling? And, I mean, think about it. It's up 62, and it's at 93.42. So, you know, we dipped into those 92 level. And so, I mean, this is all what it is. And so we have a little bit of impact on gold. Big deal. Had a great comeback. We did hit a low of 2014, and she brought its fought her way back to 2032, the New York spot price aftermarket. I'll have to check to see what the futures are looking at, see what price they're at. The stock markets today, they reversed. They were negative most of the day. They had a little bit of a turnaround, nothing to write home about. The Dow was up 46 points. They just changed it. 46 points at 27,433. The NASDAQ was down 97 points at 11,010. The S&P was up 2 points at 3,351. 10-year yield, 0.56. That's up a little bit. European and Asian markets were a mixed bag. And let's see if there's anything else that's worth...
Gold futures came back at the end of the day, Melody. About 2042.
There you go. So, you know, it's still on its uptrend. There's no change. And I don't think there was any announcement today of any stimulus. So we still don't even know how much they're going to spend. I saw one report, Dave. It was, I don't know if I can... bring this number up here quick, but there was one politician. He said he said that the debt, it's a congressman, Representative Buck, I don't know if he's a Republican or a Democrat, but he said, hey, the national debt's $30 trillion. And he says, no one's talking about it. He says, nobody's doing anything about it. Well, no kidding. You know, and he's talking about, $30 trillion when the actions that the Federal Reserve has taken during the crisis, pandemic crisis, this troubles him greatly, but all he sees is more spending. So how high do we get? That's everybody's question. He says, we're going to continue to spend until the markets say enough is enough and nobody buys the bonds, and then we have the cliff that we go off of. So there you go. That's what we've been saying. They're going to do it and do it and do it until it's off the cliff. He says he hopes long before then they can act responsibly and dial this back, but the reality is we are $30 trillion because we've authorized the Fed to engage. That's now. They're not done. They got a whole year and a half to go yet. He says, you know, debt accumulating more debt. And he thinks that the spending is one of the largest issues, of course, to come out of this virus. And it has, you know, he says, unfortunately, there's no conversation in Washington, D.C. about how to pay this money back. And the way it's going to be paid back is it's going to be defaulted on. They have no other way to get us out of the mess that they put us in. So that's what you have to look forward to. So if anybody thinks that a little pullback in gold and 20 bucks is going to scare anybody, and a little bit in silver, you ought to be backing up the truck, ladies and gentlemen. Because that's the downright truth of what's going to happen. You know, the July payroll. We've had 2 months of so-called record-setting payroll growth. That slowed in July, but was still better than what Wall Street estimates, even as a rise in the virus cases had put a damper on some of the U.S. economy. We are now in the sixth month of recession. Non-farm payrolls increased 1.763 million for the month. The government's headline U3 unemployment rate fell to 10.2% from its previous 11.1%. Consensus for growth was 1.48 million, and the unemployment rate of 10.6. You know, there are wide variations around the estimates of the pandemic's resurgence, dented plans to get the shuttered U.S. economy back online. Forecasts had ranged from a decline of 500,000 jobs to a rise of 3 million. May and June saw a combined increase of more than 7.5 million. And, of course, this is the fastest two-month rise in U.S. history. But, of course, when you go from zero, when you have a pool of 30 million people unemployed or more.
Under the category of yes, but.
Yes, but.
And the reason for those gains was the return of unemployed and other displaced workers who were laid off over the past 4 months as the nation sought to stave off the rise of cases. Now, markets initially reacted this morning with a yawn to the news, with the paper markets anyway. The stock market futures pointed a slightly lower open on Wall Street. Government bond yields mostly were flat. Gold and silver prices falling, as Melody mentioned. Now, though bars and restaurants have struggled to cope with restrictions brought on by the pandemic, leisure and hospitality led the month with growth of almost 600,000 jobs, 500 plus of those coming in eating and drinking establishments, i.e. restaurants and bars. Government jobs increased by a whopping 301,000. A lot of that they attribute to the return or the reopening of several U.S. government, federal government offices, while retail added another 258,000, presumably a lot of those jobs to get those clearance and bankruptcy sales in order, Melody. Other gains came from professional and business services and healthcare. Now, the more accurate jobless measure that includes discouraged workers and the underemployed holding part-time jobs for economic reasons was at 16.5%, that down a little bit from 18, but much higher than the bogus 10 percent plus number, and even that, the 16.5, is probably very low. We know our buddy John Williams at Shadow Stats, who has been following the federal government's older methodologies, believes that the number is much higher. We'll continue to follow it. It's one of the two or three most important indicators that we and just about everyone else in the country are looking at as a measure of progress of where we are. Melody.
Well, you know, when we look at that number, you know, the 1.7, almost 1.8, that's what, a little over 30,000 jobs per state. That's really not all that hot. So when you break it down per state, you know, and you look at some of these big states where their unemployments are so high, that's what we ought to take a look at the state unemployments, see what some of their employment rates are. So, you know, it's, hey, I'm glad it was that high. I don't know if there was any little caveats that they're going to come out and say, this could be a miscalculation like they did before. So yeah. I guess we'll take what we can get.
Yeah, perhaps there'll be clarification over the weekend. That's my guess when we're going to see, these are unadjusted numbers. There's some seasonal adjustments that are problematic for reasons we've stated the past few months. It's convenient to release numbers on a Friday.
Oh, absolutely.
For that kind of reason. not convenient for those of us who are interested in being able to talk about their details.
Let's see. 14 million more unemployed workers than job openings. The number of people receiving traditional unemployment benefits fell below 16 million. That was the first time in 17 weeks. Guess that's good news. I'm glad people are going back to work. But people really have to put everything into perspective, too. And, and sometimes the numbers don't make sense, Dave. I mean, here you have the pandemic unemployment assistance program dropped to 13 million as of July 18th. That's the lowest since June 13th. But, and it's a big but. I didn't like saying that. Anyway, it's Friday. The number of people receiving some form of unemployment insurance from the government as of July 18th rose to 32.1 million. Now that's up by 1.3 million from the previous week. So you're only ever going to hear the good numbers. Yet fewer people are applying for traditional unemployment benefits and more are moving to the pandemic emergency unemployment compensation program and short-term compensation program. They get more money there. Right, Dave?
For now. While less than 90,000 people had qualified for these extended programs as of the week ending April 11th, there are 1.5 million recipients for the week ended July 18th. And that number nearly matched the total number of people claiming benefits in all unemployment programs during the comparable week 1 year earlier. Economist Heidi Shearholt says there are 14 million more unemployed workers than job openings. Therein lies a huge challenge for business in the coming months. Chicago Fed economists say the pandemic has caused a reallocation shock. And they say that could cause unemployment to go up by 4 percentage points and keep it elevated for at least 2 to 3 years. They wrote, and I'm quoting here, because the pandemic has had a disproportionate effect on different industries, it may lead to a reshuffling of workers across those industries. Because inter-industry reallocation is more difficult and time-consuming than within-industry reallocation, the reallocation induced by the pandemic may lead to higher levels of unemployment for a more extended period. So, I guess things aren't always exactly just what they appear to be, Melody, but leave it to us to try and look beneath the surface, and we'll continue to do our best to to read between the lines for you and tell you what we think is really happening out there.
We touched on this briefly yesterday about the farmers in bankruptcy, and they are also facing labor shortages. There's a farmer in North Dakota. He grows wheat, and he usually hires the same 8 farmhands from South Africa to tend his crop, but this year half of the usual crew never made it. Even as the numbers of visas issued for farm workers climb this year, there are pockets of labor shortages developing in the U.S. agriculture. Most of the time is for highly specialized jobs, you know, like running those the complex equipment on grain farms. This farmer actually ended up paying $8,000 for one-way tickets on a charter plane to bring in the rest of his workers. And that's about twice as much as he usually spends. I'm thinking, Dave, if he's got $8,000 to spend for a one-way ticket on a charter plane, couldn't he just raise his wages and maybe get some people who live here?
Good question. There aren't many people here, apparently, who like to do that kind of work.
Because it doesn't pay. He says, we were short, and I'm not criticizing this guy, but it's everywhere in a lot of industries, service industry included. He says, we were short not just labor, but labor that had experience with certain kinds of equipment, noting the 4 workers he was waiting on usually run the seed treater, fertilizer spreader, and sprayer. Global food supplies are heavily dependent on the flow of migrant labor, and this year that flow has seen problems not just here, but across the world. The U.S.-Mexico border crossings are up for farm workers, but those who are arriving are facing the prospect of infections. As fields and food factories turn into virus hotspots, many are getting sick, and that could also be contributing to the labor crunch. But
yeah.
How many did he say he brings? 8. So that's $1,000. Well, half of them were here, so that's 4. So that's $2,000 a person.
Tough times. I mean, we know Canada's seen a 14% drop in the arrival of temporary farmer foreign agricultural workers up there. Europe, there's reportedly been an exodus of labor from Western countries back to Eastern nations like Romania, Ukraine, and Serbia. So it's not just limited here, but other parts of the world as well.
First segment is over. That went by really fast. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And I'm going to bring you up to date just on one particular coin. I was started working this right before the program. I didn't get a chance to finish. So I took just an old $20 gold piece price sheet. I just pulled it out. It happened to be June 17th. Spot gold at that time was $1,810. And I used spot price today at $2,034 and my $20 gold pieces. Since July 17th, we have gold up 12%. Not too shabby. The Mint State 63 $20 Liberty gold piece. And we haven't even seen anything yet in this market because there is no panic out there. They're up a little over 19%.
Oh, wow.
So, and again, this is just a normal, I mean, certainly people are buying it. It's not a panic buy, but it's certainly an awareness buy. And these coins are flying off the shelf. They're getting a little more difficult to find, especially for large buys. You know, if someone's looking for 100 coins, you know, I got to look around and make sure they're available and how soon they'll be in. And maybe, well, you know, maybe you can get 50 of these and we'll get 50 of another. That's how it's working. So all of those folks out there who tell you that $20 gold pieces are bad investments, I will debate them day in and day out. And I can show you time and time again. Now, anytime, it doesn't matter what product. It could be a paper product. It could be a paper stock. It could be silver. It can be the $20 gold pieces. Anything that has anytime it has the sense of being able to have higher growth than what your spot does, you're going to have a little bit more volatility. I mean, that's just a fact. And so they do have the $20 gold pieces can be a little volatile. Some markets they perform well, and some markets they don't. And but what other investment doesn't do the same thing? Markets go up, markets go down. You can't time them. But in a heated-driven market, in a panic-driven market, the $20 gold pieces, that's when they will perform the best. And we haven't seen anything yet with that spread. And I'll have to go back and dig out some old ones from 2010 and so forth to see the kind of spreads to where we're at today. So we got a long way to go. But that was just a simple example of what the $20 gold pieces can do. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And you know, Dave, we're finishing up about the farmers. I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to say about that. I think we pretty much can end that one. But there's been a lot of widespread reporting of no progress in Washington on agreeing to a new stimulus plan. The talks now seem to be on the brink of collapse. So I don't know what happens if they don't come together. Steven Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, he said that the White House and the Democratic leaders remain very, very far apart on significant issues. It was even unclear if the two sides are going to meet again today. President Trump said yesterday that he was going to sign an executive order extending the enhanced unemployment benefits and imposing a payroll tax holiday if no one can come to an agreement, if a broader package is reached. Now, a new study by the Tax Foundation estimates that such a tax holiday would cost only about $100 billion per month, Dave, in revenue to the Social Security Trust Funds, or over $1.2 trillion over the course of 1 year. The foundation did add, however, that a payroll tax cut or suspension could support companies facing liquidity problems and considering layoffs, thus easing the impact of the recession. So that's what it's going to come down to, Dave. It's either going to be the heck with Social Security Trust Fund, and here comes more bailout for companies, for multinational companies.
Mm-hmm.
The study noted that payroll tax holidays have a mixed economic record, repeat that problems that plague temporary tax policy more broadly, and may not be the most effective tool for responding to a growing economic downturn. So,
now, before I continue on this path, I am just reading now that apparently the two sides did go back in just a short while ago, with the Democrats reportedly having brought a new offer of about $1 trillion less than what had been on the table. So I don't know if that means $2.5 trillion as opposed to $3.5 trillion. That's the only thing I'm seeing here on this ticker. But getting back to the payroll tax holiday, supporters of these holidays or of a holiday say that benefits may flow to workers in the form of higher wages. The economic effect of a tax holiday, however, foundation says, depends on which side of the tax is cut, the employer or the employee. The Tax Foundation believes that reductions in the employer side of the payroll tax may have a larger economic effect than by reducing employees' share of the taxes, though the latter also stimulates aggregate demand. Foundation says an employer side payroll tax deduction or suspension would ensure greater liquidity for businesses that may otherwise become insolvent in the face of falling demand. So there's a good bit more in this study. I don't think we have to go over it now. We will come back to it if, in fact, it does become a policy or an issue that we learn is on the table. We know that this is something being pushed by Trump and some other people in his administration, while congressional Republicans and Democrats seem to be opposed to it. So, see what happens, Melody. Perhaps the week will end with a little progress anyway, and they'll have breakfast tomorrow morning to seal the deal.
They're disgusting. Anyway, there was another executive order issued to which is sort of creating a new major escalation between the U.S. and China trade war. And the executive order is kind of substituting consumer technology for soybeans. U.S. tech companies and investment firms doing business in China are in the line of fire and may be the first to feel the retaliation. Under the executive action, Americans and U.S. companies will be banned from making transactions with ByteDance, the Chinese owner of TikTok, in 45 days. Last week, President Trump had announced his intention to ban TikTok, but said he'd leave a 45-day period for Microsoft or some other U.S.-based suitor to try to close the deal to acquire the popular video sharing app TikTok. This 45-day delay will give Microsoft and other interested purchasers time to reach a deal with the owners of TikTok and address the national security concerns that are posed by the app. And
fascinating stuff. The president's order cites emergency powers as the basis for the unusual order targeting a single foreign company. According to the order, TikTok's data collection threatens to allow the Chinese Communist Party access to Americans' personal and proprietary information. And that, it says, potentially allows China to track the locations of federal employees and contractors, build dossiers of personal information for blackmail, and conduct corporate espionage. TikTok has said all along that it stores all data belonging to U.S. customers and facilities outside of China that are not subject to Chinese law. Similar but separate order covers WeChat. It's a popular messaging app in China, sometimes used by expatriates in the U.S. and also by Chinese residents who come to the U.S. To study or for certain jobs. So, the plot thickens further.
Yeah, I know. It's just, you know.
Too good to be true?
No. I don't know in what way.
Oh, no, I was being totally tongue-in-cheek. I apologize.
I thought that's what you were being, but I was just taking the off the remote chance that maybe you were not.
I said it too serious.
You did.
Ay, ay, ay. It's Friday.
But you know what? I can't believe that this is okay to do. I mean, I get the, hey, I'm no fine, you know, friend of China. I mean, I was the one then calling that, you know, I can't believe we were doing, everybody just agrees to do business with the communist nation for 15, 20 years. But I can't, and then just to push Microsoft into buying something, because that's what it's doing, it's putting pressure on Microsoft to step up to the pump, to take it over. I mean, these aren't the only two companies that store data on American citizens. So what about the rest of them? I don't know. Maybe I'm reading something into it that it's not, but...
No, I don't think so.
I mean, it's just, it doesn't even make sense. Because then if you're banning China, then you have to ban all the other ones, like the Saudis, controlling our oil here in the U.S., the refinery. I don't know. Anyway, good luck on that one. That is kind of interesting, though, but I just... The Treasury expects to sell over $2 trillion of debt for the rest of the year. With some very, very large numbers, it's kind of hard to keep up your perspective. Case in point, the U.S. government's fundraising effort, which has reached fresh extremes, trying to stay ahead of the astronomical spending that's needed just to support the world's largest economy. The Treasury said it expects to sell more than $2 trillion of debt in the second half of the year. We talked about this, I think, on Tuesday, but it's worth repeating. The next auctions of notes and bonds will be among the largest on record. And there's one thing that's pretty clear, at least for now. The Treasury market isn't buckling as the debt pile mounts. Days after Fitch Ratings slapped a warning on the U.S.'s top-notch credit score, bemoaning the lack of credible fiscal consolidation plan, Treasury officials expressed satisfaction with a remarkably successful quarter, Dave.
Well, how about that? Well, it turns out during the second quarter, they sold record amounts of debt at record low interest rates. The market twitched almost imperceptibly on the issuance projections. Now, the Treasury may well marvel at the strength of investor demand for our debt, but the other source of astronomical numbers is, as Melody mentioned earlier, the program, the Fed, which is still purchasing $80 billion of Treasuries a month. Multiply that by 12, that's over another $12 trillion a year. Expectations that the Fed will ramp up that stimulus in September, that's next month, ladies and gentlemen, play a crucial role in the market's resilience. The climb in cases, a resurgence of sorts in the U.S., the risk of turbulence around the upcoming election, good Lord. All these and so much more adding to the case for the Fed to do even more. When will the madness stop? Perhaps the better question to ask is, will it ever?
Ellen. When we go off the cliff.
There you go.
When we go off that cliff.
And we'll have to.
We'll have to, at least temporarily, until we get to the bottom and can start it all over again. You know, your blog is out, and it's kind of along the same theme that we've been talking about today, tariffs and the cost. And you can debate both sides. I mean, we're heading into a break here soon, so we'll pick it up on the other side. And I could debate both sides, you know, the cost of jobs and to the creation of jobs also. There was a new study out, I believe, Dave, by the Tax Foundation, and that's what you wrote the blog about?
Yeah, I thought with a couple of trade-related issues in the paper yesterday and today, this was a good time to bring up. It's actually an update of a February study by the Nonpartisan Tax Foundation that shows the estimated impact of tariffs. Now, according to the Tax Foundation, which is known in Washington circles to be, quote, on the center-right of the political spectrum, the tariffs imposed so far by the U.S., during President Trump's first term, will reduce GDP here by $58 billion or 2.23 percentage points, causing already stagnant wages to fall by 0.15% and eliminate roughly 180,000 full-time equivalent jobs. The administration has opposed several rounds of tariffs since 2017, which the foundation says has amounted to a total tax increase on Americans of nearly $80 billion. The administration has only reversed tariffs once during this time on steel and aluminum imports from Canada and Mexico, resulting in a decrease of approximately $2.5 billion of tariffs. And it reduced tariff rates once on imports from China as part of the two countries' Phase One trade agreement that resulted in a decrease of approximately $8.4 billion of tariffs. And overall, the foundation says tariffs damage economic well-being and lead to a net loss in production and jobs and lower levels of income. They also tend to be regressive, burdening lower income consumers the most.
Hey, I have the music. We'll be right back. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light Systems today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And we were talking about tariffs. And again, you can debate both sides, but this, Dave, your report is coming, from the Tax Foundation, nonpartisan. And it is interesting to see some of these numbers and how they affect the U.S. for jobs.
Yes, they are. You'll have to excuse me. I've been distracted by the change of, I guess we call it the shades of gray in my home studio. I was seeing the light when the program started today, Melody. Now it's almost the sun has set. Oh, well, there you go. I need to say no more.
I heard that.
Oh, my gosh. But no, this study goes on to say that if the administration were to act on outstanding threats to levy additional tariffs, GDP would fall by an additional $59 billion, or another 0.24%. resulting in another 0.17% lower wages and another 184,000 fewer full-time jobs. And yes, other countries have announced intentions to impose retaliatory tariffs on U.S. exports. If those tariffs were to be fully imposed, the Tax Foundation estimates that U.S. GDP would fall another, roughly $10 billion. That's less than one half of one tenth of a percent, and cost an additional 30,000 jobs. But all told, and this is the bottom line, perhaps I should have started here, if all the tariffs announced thus far since 2017 and those that are still on the table but not implemented were fully imposed, GDP would fall by a whopping $127 billion, or a half a percent. In the long run, and in the Tax Foundation's perspective, that would effectively offset roughly one third of the long-term impact of the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which the foundation estimates will otherwise increase GDP by 1.7%. So interesting stuff. The blog goes on to talk a bit about it, the pros and cons of the tariffs in this respect, and some effects on the U.S. dollar, namely some appreciation of the dollar in response to tariffs, offsetting potential price increases on U.S. customers. Information. Go ahead, Melanie. I'm sorry.
Well, you know what's interesting is the appreciation of the dollar. If they need to stem the losing value, you wonder if they would intentionally start messing with tariffs in order to make that appreciation. And I would think too, with tariffs, it's one thing to put tariffs on when you have an economy that is growing versus one that's in a recession already.
Well, that begs the question, and that's an excellent point. You just never know, I guess, with this administration now. But boy, you got to believe that self-preservation, if nothing else, will rule when it comes to this. Maybe we'll have a better idea after Lighthizer and Liu He of China sit down. in another week or so, talk about the progress of phase one. In the meantime, there's that France digital taxes issue and a couple of other things on the trade plate. So we shall see.
Well, you know, this is going to be a brief article here that we're going to talk about. Citigroup sees gold at $2,300. And yes, folks, they are too big to fail. And I had a nice conversation with someone yesterday that we began talking about. You know, I'm not a fan of Citigroup. I mean, they create our problems. They're part of it. Goldman Sachs, they're part of it. But when they make these statements, as Dave mentioned, it does have impacts in the investment world. Right, Dave?
It does. They have an impact with or on the investor class. These big banks are, love them or hate them, and I'll tell you, we don't love them. They have a lot of people with ears to their ground. I mean, you remember the old commercial, when E.F. Hutton speaks, people listen. Well, it's kind of akin to that. And the point here is that these aren't just high net worth individuals. I mean, they're big institutional investors as well. Large cities and states. My chair needs to be oiled. They're in the headlines today. You want to take it over?
Yeah, and you're absolutely correct. And I think when we see a lot of, you know, the big moves like we've seen in silver, you have these institutional buyers in there pushing the price up, and that's great. The difference this time, and I think that we've seen in the last run up to 50, there's true fundamentals working out there.
Yes.
We didn't have that the last time silver went to 50. And so it didn't hold. So I don't know where it's going to hold, but we have fundamentals this time. At the same price, at the same time the price is rising. So this is a good thing. So yeah, when you hear these companies, these banks, these too big to fail banks talking about gold, you know, I'm happy they're talking about it. You know, the Citigroup's economist, Catherine Mann, she says the monetary theory of inflation has been replaced by labor and product market micro theories, and market pricing of inflation risk is low. But she added the gold rally was also not an indicator that the dollar would lose its crown as the premier international reserve asset. The economists believe that while some have suggested gold rise traces the depreciation of the dollar, no other currency or country is ready or willing to take on the dollar's role. So, you know, we have a weak dollar. It's falling. And I'm not so sure I agree with all her statements there, but I'm not quite sure with her thoughts there. How they expect it to go to 2,300, but I do expect a minimum of 3,000 and 5,000. But we'll wait to get there until we know if it's going to go higher. Because when gold gets to 5,000, you're going to see a repeat of March, and a lot worse.
It'll be so much fun, Melody, when this finally does hit 5,000. To see our buddy over at the CME, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, who predicted this a couple of years ago. It'll be fun to see if he says, I told you so.
Well, we have credit card usage down. That's savings up in the second quarter. I don't know how savings can be up. How can that be up, Dave? But
well, it's suggesting that some people aren't spending their stimulus. They're just holding off on purchases. It could be, you know, people taking less vacations.
True. Very true. So it's good that Americans are cutting back on credit cards. We want them to get out of debt, and we want them to save. We want them to increase their savings. And this is happening during the worst 3 months, the worst 3 month economic period in U.S. history, as household debt fell for the first time in 6 years. And that doesn't help the economy either. Total consumer debt declined 0.2% to $14.3 trillion in the second quarter, led by a $76 billion drop in outstanding credit card balances. Mortgage borrowing rose by $63 billion in the quarter to $9.8 trillion, and almost 70% of those mortgage originations were among borrowers with a credit score of at least 760. And that's the highest percentage since record keeping began, of course, back in 2003, when they kind of knew where we were headed after that. The number of borrowers in distress fell significantly in the second quarter, but that was largely due to government relief efforts, $1,200, enhanced unemployment benefits, loan forbearance programs included in that $2.2 trillion CARES Act. So it's kind of like our own government. You know, it's kind of like everything else, Dave. Hey, it's great to see that the number of borrowers of distress fell significantly, but here's the reasons why. It's not because they did it on their own.
Yeah.
It's like the stock market. It isn't up because they did it on their own.
Yep. Yeah, delinquencies are down too, according to this report. What are we talking about? In the second quarter, fell 0.7%. Delinquencies on all consumer debt. The largest decrease of delinquencies of at least 90 days was in student loan debt. Of course, here again, another reason. It was paused by the CARES Act. All student loan providers, administrators, I forget the term, I know my daughter asked just recently, hey, it says I can stop my student loan payments until September. She said, but I don't want to. It's too late. All these providers automatically did it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
In any event, delinquencies of at least 90 days on credit cards, though, did rise to nearly 10%, and that's the highest level since 2013, Melody.
And, you know, when I'm talking about the things, just doesn't seem to make sense with so many of these numbers. Missed housing payments remain distressingly common, with 33% of Americans having failed to make their full rent or mortgage payment the first week of August.
That's amazing.
I know. So that's, you know, and then when you see that the savings are going up and it doesn't make sense because they would be using their credit cards in order to do some of these things. So I don't know. And that's according to the Apartment List Monthly Housing Payment Survey. In the first week of August, 11% of survey respondents made a partial payment of their monthly rent or mortgage bill, while an additional 22% have yet to make any payment whatsoever. Now, this continues a trend that has now lasted 4 months. The combined rate of missed and partial first week payments, that range from 30 to 33% if we go back to May. Unpaid housing costs are piling up for many Americans, renters and homeowners alike. So given that we've witnessed consistently elevated rates of non-payment for months, it is unsurprising that 32% of Americans entered August with outstanding housing debt from the prior months, Dave.
Yeah, and among those with unpaid housing bills, Melody, two-thirds of renters and a little bit less, 65% of homeowners, say they're worried about facing an eviction or foreclosure within the next 6 months. I suspect, I'm going to be hopeful here. It's Friday, so the glass is more than half full that there's going to be an agreement. But in lieu of an agreement for additional, particularly unemployment insurance, that figure could really get higher. The amount of folks who are worried, as well as actual evictions and foreclosures. And notably, two-thirds of renters in this survey group have not made a complete August payment now at the end of the first week. in August. So there is such a lot of economic stress, financial stress in households across the country, Melody. A lot of it, you know, some people might think is inconsequential, but we're talking about 1,000, 2,000, 13% more than 2,000 in arrears. It's not a small change, particularly when you're out of a job.
No, not at all. And we got just a few minutes left. And what's funny is the Chicago Fed, Charles Evans, said that the Fed has limited room to do any more, and that Congress needs to step up and save the economy. The ball is in Congress's court. Yeah, well, good luck with that one. So we'll see. I don't think this economy can be saved. It might be able to have some patchwork done on it, but I don't think it's going to be 100% saved. And the U.S. is projected to see, we mentioned this yesterday, the U.S. is projected to see the worst reversal of fortune this year in ranking of global economic misery, underscoring just how much havoc has been brought to this nation. America fell 25 spots. 25 spots. Unbelievable. Wow. The Bloomberg's Misery Index, it tallies inflation and unemployment outlooks for 60 economies, and we dropped 25 spots. We'll be back on Monday, ladies and gentlemen. 1-800-375-4188. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless. Thank you, Dave.
Bye-bye.
Seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.